Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. It is so great to be back at Ouachita and in Arkadelphia. So the last time I walked out on this stage was my senior recital, my piano recital. So, wow. It's a real treat to be here, and thank you for inviting me to be participating in the Birkett Williams Lecture Series. Ouachita Baptist University is where I got my undergraduate degrees, but it's far more than just a place where I attended school. My father, Finley Chu, was an economics professor at Ouachita from 1963 to 1967, and then after he became ill with stomach cancer and he passed away in 1967, Ouachita offered my mother, Rosemary Chu, a job as a resident hall director in the brand new Francis Crawford West. So my mother and I moved into the girls' dormitory, and where I copied the college girls in the dorm, and so as a fourth grader, I learned to put on makeup way before my friends did. And even though I didn't have any brothers and sisters, I quickly experienced hundreds and now thousands of young women calling Rosemary Chu Mom Chu over the next 43 years while she was a dorm mother. So Ouachita has held a deep and meaningful place in my heart. And when I was a student at Ouachita, I actually thought that Birkett Williams was the name of the cafeteria. So now I find out that Birkett Williams was the Ouachita grad that he was, and he one of Ouachita's largest benefactors, and the accomplishments he had of the Automotive Hall of Fame. And so it's an honor to be here as part of the Birkett Williams lecture series, named after somebody who made such a significant contribution to Ouachita. So I thought I would just give you a little bit of an overview about what the National Endowment for the Arts is, what it does, some of our current work, and then we'll leave some time for any questions that you want to ask. So here's a little bit about the National Endowment for the Arts. It's an independent federal agency, and it was established 5 decades ago in 1965, so 51 years ago. So if you look back at that time period when it was created, in a lot of ways, 1965 was a time of optimism, and it was of hope and reawakening. The Voting Rights Act had been signed just a month before the National Endowment for the Arts was established, and America completed its first successful spacewalk earlier that summer. And after 3 attempts, marchers from Selma, Alabama successfully reached the Capitol steps in Montgomery. So there were some turbulent times, to be sure, but there were also times when we could begin to dream about the new frontiers and the new freedoms. So this was the climate that was happening of newer aspirations for the American people that the National Endowment for the Arts was created, along with its fraternal twin, the National Endowment for the Humanities. And President Lyndon Johnson signed the enacting legislation to nurture American creativity, elevate the nation's culture, and sustain and preserve the country's artistic traditions throughout the nation. So those are the words that were in the enacting legislation. From dense neighborhoods of cities, large and small, to vast rural spaces, and all Americans had the opportunity to experience the arts. So it was written that the world leadership which has come to the United States cannot rest solely upon superior power, wealth, and technology, but must be solidly founded upon worldwide respect and admiration for the nation's highest qualities as a leader in the realm of ideas and of the spirit. Spirit and ideas. So these are the things that energize us and that enrich us. And a lot of people describe America as being what it is today because of its commitment to chasing those wild dreams and pursuing innovative ideas. And the Congress of 1965 recognized that in order to be an effective leader with might and strength, you also had to have heart and soul. So for the past 50 years, that's been at the heart of what the National Endowment for the Arts has focused upon. It has launched programs in their early stages, Steppenwolf Theater, to the American Film Institute, Prairie Home Companion, Sundance Film Festival, PBS's Live from Lincoln Center, It launched more than 400 translations of literature from 86 other countries and 66 languages, grants across the nation to attract students and educators and audience members who could not buy their own tickets, initiatives to deliver programs to communities across the nation, from arts programs at military installations and featuring masters of jazz and folk and traditional arts in schools and concert halls and on radio and TV, to the Deaf Initiative that we launched that brought the arts to those with hearing challenges. Maya Lin, Wynton Marsalis, thousands of artists and arts organizations of all genres have received National Endowment for the Arts grants during their formative years. And so over the past 5 decades, the National Endowment for the Arts has made more than 147,000 grants totaling $5 billion with a significant ability to leverage those dollars. So for every dollar that's awarded by the National Endowment for the Arts, an additional $7 to $9 from other outside funds have been made to the same arts project. So if I put my business hat on, I would say that a 1-to-7 ratio is a very good return on our investment. So in terms of the way we operate, we receive an annual appropriations from Congress. So I meet with members of Congress as often as I'm able to keep them updated on the work that we're doing. And so when I first started at the National Endowment for the Arts, the appropriation amount was $146 million for that year. And last year, Congress actually gave us an increase of nearly $2 million, for which we're very appreciative, especially right now during very complex conditions with the budget. So now our current budget's almost $150 million, and there's another proposal by Congress to increase the budget again for the National Endowment for the Arts, an additional $1.97 million for the coming year. And the House of Representatives has already voted yes on this second increase, and we're currently waiting on the Senate vote. So you can see the general range of appropriated amounts to the National Endowment for the Arts budget. I think the highest the appropriated amount has ever been in the history of the National Endowment for the Arts has been $175 million. So last year, we awarded grants all across the nation. We do this every year. And you don't have to be an arts organization to apply for a National Endowment for the Arts grant as long as the applicant is a nonprofit organization. So you might be a science organization or a senior citizen center or a university. And as long as you have a registered 501c3 nonprofit designation and you're applying for support of an arts project, you can send in a grant application. You can also be a local government, a local municipality, to apply for a grant as long as it's for an arts project. We are not able to support anything related to bricks and mortar, so we don't support capital campaigns, no buildings, no requests for operating support, no endowments, only arts projects. And you can select which category to apply. So we have over at least 10 different discipline categories. They range from museums and visual arts to music and opera and theater, dance, folk and traditional arts, arts education, and on and on. And we also give research grants. So over these 50 years, we've wanted to pay attention to how American society functions, how it evolves, so that the grants from the National Endowment for the Arts are relevant. We do a lot of ongoing research about the different ways that people participate in the arts. So for example, when our research showed that 3/4 of all American adults, so that's about 167 million American adults, participate in the arts first through electronic media, especially digital, we made sure that our grant category, called Media Arts, included applications for digital projects. So the National Endowment for the Arts has always funded projects in media arts, mostly radio, television, but now we've included digital projects. So that's how we really wanted to make sure we paid attention to how America's evolving. Another example of relevance is when we started seeing huge cuts in the arts in public schools. And we started adding a section last year called Arts Collective Impact in Arts Education. So the Collective Impact Arts Education grants are about connecting the education system to the community. So you might get a collective impact grant if you are, say, a public school that links to a nonprofit organization in the community that provides, say, music lessons for students if the music classes have been cut. So collective impact grants are larger than the typical grants we give at the National Endowment for the Arts. Our typical average grants at the NEA are usually around $25,000, maybe to $30,000, but the collective impact arts education grants are more like $150,000. And we just started these, and already we're starting to see some real promising results where the arts can still be there for students in the schools. We have National Endowment for the Arts staff who are experts in their art discipline category. So if you're applying for a National Endowment for the Arts grant, but you don't know which category best fits your application, just contact us and talk with us. All of the grant guidelines and the names of the discipline directors are on our website at arts.gov, and they're very approachable. This staff is really expert. They're experts in their field, but they're also very authentic and genuine. We're your arts agency. So the only time we cannot be approachable is when you send in the grant application and then you hit on the word on the computer, submit. And then for purposes of staying objective, then we back out and we don't enter into any more conversations about the grant proposal until after the grants have been awarded. But prior to that, talk with us anytime if you're thinking about applying, because we can guide you through what some of the forms mean and some of the words. So the way we judge applications and grant proposals, they're only judged on two criteria, excellence and merit. That's the only two. So whether the project demonstrates a level of excellence, no matter what discipline category it is, and whether it's meritorious, whether it's worthy of being funded. And there's a three-step process to awarding a National Endowment for the Arts grant. So step one is that the first people who read the proposals are citizens. So for every single grant discipline, we have panels of experts that we bring in and give them the grant applications. And with their own knowledge and insights, they make recommendations on whether they think the proposal is worth funding. Some of you may have served as citizen panels, and we bring panelists in from all across the nation, and we talk with them, and they read them, and they can tell whether the nuances work, and they can tell by reading applications, because they're experts in the field, whether it makes a difference or not. And the panel of experts have come from certainly every state in the nation. And we try to make sure that each citizen panel member is well represented from across the nation and not just in certain areas of the nation. You are also welcome to apply to be a citizen panel member. And if you have an expertise in a specific arts discipline, feel free to send in your resume. And then that's the first step. And then the second step involves our National Council on the Arts member. So this is an advisory council to the National Endowment for the Arts and to the chair. And they're a group of people also who come from all over the United States, and they bring their insights into the National Endowment for the Arts. So just like the chair position, the National Council members are also appointed by the President of the United States, and they must be confirmed by the United States Senate. And there are around 20 National Council members right now, and they represent all kinds of arts areas. So we have the head of Sony Pictures, there's a theater producer, there's a choreographer of Bharatanatyam Indian dance, there's a head of a major music conservatory, several visual artists, a museum executive, a country music performer and songwriter, and so forth. So you see they come from all kinds of disciplines and areas and geographic areas as well. And their names are all on our website. And they also make recommendations on which proposals should be funded. And then finally, step three is that the proposals go to the chair. So the reason I loved this process that we have is that I think it's a very effective grant decision-making process, because there's no single one person telling you what the arts are or what they're not or what they should be or who should be funded and who shouldn't. These are your peers making recommendations, and people who understand the dynamics of the arts and know what projects can make a difference. So when you get a National Endowment for the Arts grant, it's quite a compliment, because your peers have also stood in and made a recommendation and said, I think they need to be funded. So congratulations if you've received one. And finally, we're also very attentive to making sure that this grant decision-making process is clean and it doesn't have any conflicts of interest. That's a big deal to us. There's no questioning on whether there were any kinds of self-dealing or anything like that. This is really pure. And so any of us, including the chair, will recuse ourselves of making decisions on any grant proposal where we have had or we have now any kind of an affiliation. So, for example, if a grant proposal came in from Ouachita Baptist University or any other university that I attended, our staff would immediately pull the proposal away from my reading stack, and I would recuse myself in writing from making any decision. Or if I had, say, a friendship with somebody else who lived elsewhere who sent in a proposal from their organization, I would recuse myself from reading or making a decision on that proposal. And our staff does the same recusal process for themselves. The citizen panels do the same thing. Our national council members do the same thing. And so over the past 2 years, we have received back-to-back commendations from the United States Government of Office Ethics for the effectiveness of our NEA ethics procedures, especially in the area of financial disclosures. And this is actually very important to us because it's our way of ensuring that our grant processes are clean and they're impartial, and that all of those who review the proposals get to focus solely on two things: excellence and merit of each project. And then finally, every year, we give 40% of our budget each year to the states and the regions in America to re-grant the money. So each of the 50 states has a state arts agency who receives funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. And there are 6 regional arts organizations also, which cover multiple states, which also receive National Endowment for the Arts funding and work with the National Endowment for the Arts. They must match the funding from the NEA with funds from the state government, and they use these funds to reach out even further to communities large and small and urban and rural across their state. So, for example, we support the Arkansas Arts Council, who knows how and where the arts are thriving in places in Arkansas and where they can encourage even more participation. And this is the same in every state, as well as the United States jurisdictions that we have, like Guam and Puerto Rico, the United States Virgin Islands, and Washington, D.C. So you can see through all of these partnerships that we have with the states and the regions and the territories, the jurisdictions, and through our grant work with the citizen panels and the National Council members, that we're all together shaping and supporting the arts in America as a group, each in our own ways. And there isn't a cultural minister that's telling you what art is and what it isn't. We're doing this together, and that's a really satisfying way, and I think a wonderful model in America. So at the heart of the work of the National Endowment for the Arts is this mission that the arts belong to all of us. So we would be really eager to move away from the old and tired perception that the arts are often a silo by themselves, or that they're only for some people but not for others, when we know that that is not the case. So when it comes to the arts, there is no such thing as a marginalized population. And we are very committed to making sure that there are ways for every individual, from child to grandparent, and everybody in between, to have an opportunity to find their creative voice through the arts and live in a community where creativity can thrive. So why is this important? Because we believe that the arts instill our lives with value and connection and creativity and innovation, and they make our world a richer and more rewarding place to be. We have seen that the arts play a very big role in the economy of a community. So the United States Department of Commerce noted that in 2013, arts and cultural production contributed $704.2 billion to the U.S. economy, or 4.2% of the nation's GDP. So that's a 32% increase since 1998, and that actually has the arts outpacing other sectors like accommodation and food services and retail trade. So this is a way of showing through hard evidence the impact that the creative field has on the economy. And so where does the National Endowment for the Arts fit into this economic impact? How do the nonprofits that we fund fall into the broader picture? Well, the nonprofit arts sector alone in the United States contributed $12.1 billion in a single year, and it employed more than 167,000 workers in a single year who earned a total of $7.8 billion in compensation all within a single year. So the nonprofit arts sector alone does have a formidable presence when it comes to making an economic contribution to their communities. So in the past, jobs in the arts have been associated with financial and professional instability, but what we're seeing now is different from the old perception of the starving artist. And now, possibly more than ever before, the arts are being recognized as an important contribution to helping a workplace be more creative. Employers in non-arts organizations are looking for artists who can help them solve those old and tired problems in new ways. And communities are looking for arts activities that can draw together like a giant magnet, the vitality that brings people together and sparks economic rejuvenation as well. And so when you look at the current numbers, they all say the same thing. When it comes to jobs, the arts actually make sense. In fact, individuals who identify themselves as an artist in their primary occupation represent a pretty sizable workforce group. There are more working artists in the United States than there are accountants and auditors. It's not that we don't like accountants and auditors, we do. But there are more working artists in the United States than accountants and auditors. Than there are people in the legal occupations. There are more working artists in the United States than scientists. More than physicians and surgeons. There are more working artists in the United States than there are the number of social workers, bartenders, athletes, coaches, umpires, librarians, and dentists combined. So in total, 2.2 million people in the United States have primary jobs as artists, and another 270,000 have secondary jobs as artists, and not all of them are starving. So the mean salary for artists, the average salary for artists is estimated about $45,000 per year, and this is actually higher than the mean income for all United States workers, which is about $41,000. So artists are also a very educated segment of our labor force. In fact, they're twice as likely to have a college degree than other workers in the United States. And if you're looking for an entrepreneurial spirit, and that is a hot commodity right now in the marketplace, look at artists. More than one-third, 34%, are self-employed. And that's 3.5 times more than the total U.S. workforce. So it's time to move away from the old and tired stereotype that if you go into the arts as a career, you will always be starving. So think about the Creative Arts Therapies program where the National Endowment for the Arts has connected the arts with the military. At first thought, the arts and the military might seem to operate in totally different orbits, but when we bring them together, the results can be very powerful. So in 2011, we launched a Creative Arts Therapies program for our military service members, and many of them who have faced deployments abroad and have been affected by the invisible wounds of Iraq, Afghanistan, traumatic brain injury, other associated psychological health conditions. And so our Creative Arts Therapies program, which currently operates at the National Intrepid Center of Excellence, which is called the NICO, at the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. And then we have another program at Fort Belvoir Community Hospital Brain Wellness Center in Virginia. And the National Endowment for the Arts funds arts therapists for these clinical programs, visual arts therapists, music therapists, creative writing teachers. And so the results of the work of these therapists and arts therapists and writing teachers have been transformational for our service members. They're also a great equalizer. So sometimes when people don't have the same opportunities as others, the arts can level the playing field socially and academically, and they can help us reach our full potential and become a tool for growth and advancement. There is a very strong relationship between students who participate in the arts and an increase in test scores in non-art subjects. There's a relationship between students who participate in the arts and a decrease in trips to the principal's office and truancy rates. There's an increase in daily school attendance. And this is especially true for students who come from low-income households. When they're engaged with the arts, children who are living in the deepest levels of poverty actually outperform the general population in a number of academic areas, including math grades and high school graduation rates. So when we travel to these communities where people are talking about how the economy base has started to become stronger and stable because of the presence of arts projects, we know that we've actually entered a space where people feel enlivened and they want to be there. And when we hear our military service members who have been affected by post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury say that because they get to create now through this arts program, they can now manage their stress and their memory is more enhanced and they can communicate clearer, they can manage their physical pain better, we believe that the arts have allowed them to tap into the meaning and the value of their lives, which were always there, but they may have been buried during times of combat. And when we see families who do not use English as their first language communicate effectively through the arts, or youth who come from households with fewer opportunities participating in the arts and then performing academically on a more even playing field with other students in their class, we know that the arts have provided opportunities to transcend the use of linear everyday conversations and touch something far deeper and more meaningful, and it makes their lives worthwhile. And at the same time, those meaningful moments have sparked more economic vitality. They've provided more opportunities to heal those invisible wounds of war. They've evened the playing field for diverse cultures to communicate with each other and empowered students to want to learn. And they've encouraged businesses and other organizations to make creativity a key component for hiring in order to help them meet their own objectives. So art for art's sake, and art for the sake of celebrating beauty in our lives, and art for the transformational power of connecting us to so many other aspects of our lives, it all counts. So where are the National Endowment for the Arts grants? Well, there are currently National Endowment for the Arts grants in all 50 states, as well as the District of Columbia, the United States territories. There are currently National Endowment for the Arts grants in all 435 congressional districts. But making sure that all Americans have the opportunity to be engaged in and benefit from the arts, it doesn't just mean that the geographic location of the grant, it also means that we need to look at whether our grants represent inclusiveness from the broad range of organizational sizes, small, medium, large, to people from all walks of life. So we analyze our grants constantly in terms of organizational size. Nearly half of all the National Endowment for the Arts grants go to small organizations, and even more go to mid-size organizations. And in terms of grants and community population, half of the NEA grants go to communities with population of mid-size, 250,000 to under the super giant city sizes of 4 million. And 13% of the National Endowment for the Arts grants are in rural areas. And so what about the audiences or those who participate in these wonderful programs that you put that you have all across the nation that are generated by National Endowment for the Arts grants? People in living in low-income households benefit significantly from National Endowment for the Arts grants, especially in the area of arts education. 50% of all the arts education grants we give are awarded to organizations in high-poverty communities. And we've also been able to celebrate some key moments at the National Endowment for the Arts. We have two new international arts exchange programs, so it's not like there have never been any international arts exchanges before. But this is the first time that the United States government, through the NEA, has worked on an exchange program with the government of Cuba. And it's also the first time to work with the government of the People's Republic of China. And then, as Dr. Gerber mentioned, we did receive a special Tony Award this year for support of theater and musical theater across the United States. Over the past 50 years, more than 100 plays and musicals across the nation, musical theater as well as theater, have been some in your states. Began with National Endowment for the Arts support. Even this year, we supported workshops for Hamilton and Spring Awakening, launched the first Deaf Theater Initiative. Those have been nominated for a Tony Award. 33 of them won a Tony. And so think about all of those nonprofit theater and musical theater productions and arts education programs for kids that involve theater and the impact it's made. So I hope that this gives you a general sense of what the National Endowment for the Arts does, what it is, how we operate, and what we do, because we know that art is found on museum walls, and it's also seen on stage, but it is not removed from the rest of society, and it's not isolated in some ivory tower, because the arts are all around us, and they touch every aspect of our world, whether we're aware of it or not. They contribute to our economy, they revitalize our neighborhoods, they increase our sense of well-being, they're an equalizer in communicating with families in communities who do not use English as their first language. They spark new ideas in science and technology. They draw out our feelings to help us understand ourselves. And they provide us with an avenue of expression. So I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be back at Ouachita and join you this evening. I want to thank you because you're my Ouachita family. And thank you for all you've done for me and my family. So at this point, I thought it would be really great to just open it up. And if you have any questions, we're happy to answer them. I'm happy to answer them. We, look at all of us. I'm happy to answer them. Don't be shy.